in the last section of Genesis, we're no longer going to see God choosing between two brothers. You know, sneaky Jacob gets renamed to Israel, a name meaning God prevails. And Israel has 12 sons. They'll essentially become the 12 tribes of Israel. And much of the focus in the last section of Genesis is on the life story of Jacob's 11th son, Joseph. Now, it's possible that you've heard Joseph presented as a type of Jesus. He's rejected by his brothers, but he's God's chosen tool to save that family. Well, Joseph isn't mentioned anywhere in the New Testament as a picture of Christ. It's tempting, and we're certainly able to read the Joseph narratives and make parallels about his favored status and his rejection and ultimately his rule over his brothers and compare that to Jesus, but it should maybe give us pause when not one New Testament writer does that. I don't want to ignore that Joseph is lauded for his faith in Hebrews 11. Moses spends a considerable amount of time explaining Joseph's life, but maybe that's because his audience, the Hebrews who are leaving Egypt and wandering the wilderness, Joseph's life is vital to explain that question, how did we get here? It was by Joseph being sold into Egypt by his wicked brothers and God preserving his life, and the whole family of Hebrews ends up preserved and ultimately enslaved in Egypt. So Moses has to tell that story, but let me give you a different viewpoint, that maybe Joseph isn't all that Moses wants us to see. The story of Joseph begins in Genesis 37, and then in Genesis 38, it tells a story that has nothing to do with Joseph, before picking back up in Joseph's life in Genesis 39. Really, right there in the middle of Joseph's story, Moses breaks it up with this nasty, this just genuinely ugly account of one of Joseph's brothers named Judah. Really, many times over the years, I've read Genesis 38 and wondered, why is this here? Why do I have to read about this? Right? In Genesis 38, we're told Jacob's fourth oldest son, Judah, married a Canaanite woman. It's a major error for Abraham's descendants. It's the same kind of rebellion Esau had committed. But what Moses already knows, and we're going to find out, is that the blessing is going to come through Judah, but not through that Canaanite woman. Ultimately, if we're continuing the theme of this promised seed, it has to include this story about Judah, and Moses knows that. So the story goes on that Judah's oldest son, gets married to a girl named Tamar, but he is so wicked that the Lord takes his life. And we're not told why, but we know that Tamar is now left a widow. And the tradition of that day called for what's known as levirate marriage. Ur's brother is to marry and care for this young widow, Tamar. But instead, his brother Onan was willing to take advantage of her sexually, but that's all he would do. And so Judah tells Tamar, go back to your father's house and live there, remain an unmarried widow until my youngest son, Shelah, is old enough to marry, and then we'll send for you. But of course they didn't. The girl had married one son who was wicked and was abused by another, and the rest of the family completely ignored their responsibility to her. Now, I wish that was as ugly as the story got, but it gets even worse. Tamar decides to dress up as a prostitute and seduce her father-in-law, Judah, as he walks down this lonely road. And so he's forgotten Tamar to the point where he doesn't even recognize her, and he offers to pay her later by sending a servant with a goat. And until then, as a security for this wicked transaction between the two, Judah gives her his ring and bracelets and staff. He's going to get all those back when the servant comes with payment. But of course, when the servant comes later with payment, this mysterious prostitute has disappeared. We don't know that Judah's too disturbed by this, but a few months later, when someone tells him Tamar is pregnant, he gets angry. Judah is livid. How dare she be unfaithful to his family? And so Judah wants the full measure of the law exercised. He wants Tamar executed. But when she's dragged before him, Tamar says, if you want to know who the father is, it's the man who left these behind. And she shows him his own ring and bracelets and staff. Now, maybe I'm the only one who's ever read that and thought, why do I need to know the salacious details of this family shame? It's not really uplifting in any way. I mean, I guess it shows the principle that your sin will find you out, but otherwise it's not particularly informative. It's when you realize that one of the purposes for Moses is to record that line of promise that this story becomes clear. Very similar to the story of Jacob and Esau, Tamar gives birth to twin boys, names them Perez and Zerah. And when the New Testament opens, Matthew begins tracing the lineage of Jesus to Abraham, and here's what we find. Matthew opens the book of the generation of Jesus Christ, the son of David, the son of Abraham. Abraham begat Isaac, and Isaac begat Jacob, and Jacob begat Judah and his brothers, and Judah begat Perez and Zerah by Tamar, and Perez begat Hezron, and Hezron begat Ram. In order to give a full accounting of the progress of the promise of God, Moses needs to tell us about Judah and this son Perez. And so sandwiched in there in Genesis 38, Moses interrupts that story of Joseph so that we don't take our eyes off the prize, right? In fact, even in Joseph's story, if there's a picture of Jesus, it may well be that it's Judah more than Joseph. And here's why I say that. Remember how the brothers went into Egypt for food and they didn't recognize Joseph, right? He'd risen to second in command in Egypt's government. He gave them food and said, when you come back again, you have to bring your youngest brother Benjamin with you next time. But Benjamin was the favorite son of Jacob. He wouldn't let him go. Until at the point of starving, all of the brothers argue with Jacob to allow Benjamin to go into Egypt. And it is, of all the brothers, Judah who stands up and says, I will be a surety for him. Right? In Genesis 43, Judah said unto Israel his father, send the lad with me, and we will arise and go, that we may live and not die, both we and you, and also our little ones. I will be a surety, a security for him. Of my hand shall you require him, if I bring him not unto you, and set him before thee. Let me bear the blame forever. Judah is putting his own life on the line for Benjamin as a promise to deliver that beloved child to his father. In the very next chapter, he's called on to do just that. He's willing to give his own life in Benjamin's place. And it is Judah's far distant son, Jesus, who does the same for us. In Hebrews 7:22, it tells us that Jesus is a surety, a security of a better covenant. He put his own life in our place to ensure all of us Benjamins are delivered safely to his father. So Judah becomes this extraordinary character in the Bible story. I want to show you one more thing before we close out the story of Genesis. When Jacob is old and about to die, he calls together his sons. And as is tradition in the family, he's going to pass on the blessing in Genesis 49. What we find is in these brothers is for reasons of sin and wickedness, Jacob does not give the blessing to his oldest son, Reuben. He also passes on the next oldest sons, Simeon and Levi, he passes over them. And then when he gets to the fourth son, Judah, here's what he says. Judah, you are he whom your brethren shall praise. Your hands shall be in the neck of your enemies. Your father's children shall bow down before you. Judah is a lion's whelp. From the prey, my son, you are gone up. He stooped down. He couched as a lion, and as an old lion, who shall rouse him up? The scepter shall not depart from Judah, nor a lawgiver from between his feet, until Shiloh comes, and unto him shall the gathering of the people be. The continuation of the promise of Abraham went to Isaac, and then from Isaac to Jacob, and now from Jacob to Judah. His brothers, it said, will praise him. They'll bow down before him. His enemies will be in his grasp. I love how he's described as a lion. He's as, to simplify it, as wise as an old lion, as strong as a young lion. But I want you to look at this verse 10 with me for a second. Verse 10 says, the scepter shall not depart from Judah, nor a lawgiver from between his feet, until Shiloh come, and unto him shall the gathering of the people be. Who or what is Shiloh? It's kind of a difficult word to translate. Most commonly, it's a word that means either the bringer of rest or the one to whom it belongs. Now, either way, it seems to be making a promise about a future individual to come from Judah. Judah is going to be the lawgiver. Judah will have the scepter, the symbol of ruling power of kings. But he'll only have it until the rest bringer comes, or he'll hold that scepter until the one to whom it really belongs comes to take it. We'll find later that it will indeed be the tribe of Judah that's the tribe of kings in Israel. But the promise here is that someone will come from Judah and bring perfect peace and rest. This man Judah, who his father has described as wise as an old lion and strong as a young lion, it's Judah who gets the promise. The promise is that Judah may have a long line of kings, but all of them are holding the scepter and keeping the seat warm because there is someone to whom the kingship truly belongs. That promise is never forgotten in Scripture. If you do your read through the Bible in a year plan, and in January you're reading this promise to Judah, and in December you find yourself in the final book of Revelation, and you read this scene in heaven about Jesus. Revelation 5, starting verse 4, I wept much, because there was no man found worthy to open the book and to read the book, and neither to look thereon. And one of the elders said unto me, weep not. Behold, or look, the Lion of the tribe of Judah, the Root of David, has prevailed to open the book and to loose the seven seals thereof. It's Genesis that sets this foundation for God's grand plan of redemption in Jesus Christ. He is the promised seed of Eve that's going to crush Satan's head. He's the fulfillment of the promise to Abraham and Isaac and Jacob to bless all the families of the earth. He is that singular son, the Lion of Judah's tribe, to whom kingship and authority truly belong. And so as we transition into Exodus, the Hebrews are going to find themselves enslaved in Egypt. But whatever else is happening, the promise of God and his plan of redemption through Jesus, it is marching forward and it is unstoppable.